Dominic Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. It is time for the biggest debate of the week in America. Jared versus Joe. Caroline not with us this week. So, Ian, you are in Caroline's place in the questions chair. Do you think you can handle the pressure?
I'll try my best.
Somebody on the text line brought up the idea that maybe the text line should be the judge. I'm going to let Ian be the judge on this one, but maybe we see. Now, Caroline will be with us for Jared versus Joe going forward, but it's also not a bad idea. But with that, it's time for, again, the most important debate of the week, Jared versus Joe.
Jared Stillman versus Joe Rexroad, now on Stillman and Company.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Jared versus Joe is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Joe, congratulations to your Tennessee Volunteers on winning the championship, and congratulations to you for getting to be there in person to see it.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Is that what this week I'm GB Joe?
I mean,
okay. Yeah.
Didn't see you in Vancouver covering the Predators, Joseph.
So that would have been me being a Preds fan then if I was? What does it mean?
No, I'm just saying that, you know, if you were covering them equally and fairly, fair and balanced, you would have been in Vancouver covering the Predators. You just weren't because it wasn't important to you, but the Vols in Omaha is because that's your team.
Hey, I'm playing for the championship, sure. We're first of the first round, but yeah, whatever. Whatever you think, buddy.
Ian, lead us off.
Okay, well, let's start with some of this College World Series stuff. The Vols won their first national title in baseball. So let's just get right down to it. Who is now the better program, Vanderbilt baseball or Tennessee baseball? Joe, go ahead first.
Okay, well, I mean, we already had the debate before, of course, and my argument for Tennessee before, you know, was obviously really the biggest thing was knowing that you've got a long time with Vitello, whereas there's some uncertainty with Corbin's at a point where, like, I just don't know. The game has changed a lot. Clearly, he's in on this, and so I think that's great for Vanderbilt fans. But yeah, I'm not gonna change my answer based on Tennessee winning the national championship. I mean, that is an accelerator that takes you to a totally different level. You know, nothing can be.
So, what was your answer then?
Tennessee. My answer then was Tennessee. You don't remember the debate?
Not particularly.
So your argument was the historical achievement, which, like I said, that's not what I'm arguing. I'm not arguing who has accumulated more over history or done more over time. Of course that's Vanderbilt. But right now, which to me is, where are you as a program? What are you doing right now?
But didn't you base this off of, like, the Kentucky football had a better program than Tennessee in, like, 2019 or something? Which was just ridiculous, even though Tennessee sucked then.
Well, that was because I brought that up because Robbie got mad at me for saying Kentucky was a better program. That was when Tennessee was doggy doo doo with Jeremy Pruitt, right? Right at that point, Kentucky had stability and consistent winning, even if it wasn't a championship contender. Tennessee, though the resources were certainly better, the history way better, Tennessee was just in a bad place. I mean, the program is, when it comes down to who's the better program, that's really code for, like, who's the better performing coach at that point? I mean, really, in my opinion, unless there's just a huge disparity in, you know, resources and just the access to talent, the ability to win. But right now, I mean, Tennessee is the best program in college baseball.
So I agree that Tennessee is the better program now. I do think it is the championship that is what pole vaulted Tennessee over Vanderbilt. But your kind of definition of what's the better program, I'm not sure I vibe with at all. And I use that Kentucky-Tennessee football one as kind of a base point. Even in 2019 or 2020, you would have thought over the next 15 years, Kentucky was going to win more than Tennessee in football?
No, but see, the 15 is ridiculous. I mean, you can't go more than five. You have to go with who's the coach now, and what's the next recruiting cycle look like for that coach versus that coach?
No. It's bigger than that. And I'll give you an example of how it's bigger than that, which is, what's the better program in college baseball, Texas or Texas A&M?
Honestly, that's a great question. I mean, Texas A&M has everything that you'd want. Now, they just lost their coach to Texas, so I'll pick Texas. And I probably would pick Texas anyway, but like I don't think that's a good comparison.
Well, but Texas had won since Augie won, I believe, in 2005.
You're saying Texas had not won?
Right. I don't think Texas has won the title since Augie, may he rest in peace, one of the best baseball coaches of all time, won in 2005. And A&M was just in the championship game. And so, to me, like I agree with you that Tennessee has vaulted ahead of Vanderbilt. But your logic for how you got there, I completely disagree with you on. When I say that I think Tennessee is now the better program, who has the better record all time? Tennessee. Who has the better head-to-head record? Tennessee. Who has the better recent success? Tennessee. Does Vanderbilt have better resources than Tennessee, i.e. what Texas has over A&M? I would argue that they don't. And then I do think, to your point, I do think that it's okay to project a little bit, but when it comes to what's the better program, I'm not sure we necessarily can give you credit for games that haven't been played, because I don't know what Notre Dame is going to do over the next 10 years. But I do know that Notre Dame, even if Marcus Freeman stinks, is a great football program, and Notre Dame one day will still be good. No, Nebraska was a great football program. I'm not convinced they will be good. With Vandy, I think Vanderbilt is good because of one reason, and it's Tim Corbin, and I think he's lost his fastball. And so at this point, even though they have more national titles, I think Tennessee's a bigger draw. I think Tennessee has better resources. I think Tennessee has a better all-time record. I think Tennessee's better head-to-head. I think Tennessee has the younger, better coach. And Tennessee now has a national championship, so Vanderbilt can't play that you haven't won the title card. So to me, it's Tennessee. We're in agreement on that, but I think your logic of how you got there is off.
Okay. I see you're trying to do the word count championship again today. Good job.
You talked forever about your whole reason and why you thought that they were better than Vandy, because you thought that Kentucky football was going to be better than a better program than Tennessee. You call me when they start putting Kentucky football college game day on a consistent basis, and then we can talk. Ian, what's next?
Okay, to this point, is Tony Vitello the best college baseball coach in the country? Jared, go ahead.
I think he is. I think that we have to look at, the way that we should look at college sports, but especially college baseball and maybe even women's basketball, the sports that have really elevated over the last couple of years, is, and maybe even basketball, men's basketball, we should look at it as before NIL and after NIL. You know, it's like AD and BC, right? Like, it's different times. And in this era, Tony Vitello has dominated the sport. 3 College World Series in 4 years. The year they didn't go, they were the best team in the country. It's the best team he's had, was the team that didn't go to Omaha. He's won a national title. And even the best coaches, the best coach, Corbin's a good example of this. His best team was 2007. And he won a title in a year that he didn't have his best team in 14. It's just, it's hard in baseball. Bobby Cox won a World Series, won his best team, but he still won a World Series. And so you're not going to always win, even when you're the best team in baseball, but the best end up winning enough, right? Like Earl Weaver maybe didn't win every year, but Earl Weaver was going to win titles. Sparky Anderson was going to win titles because they're the best. And in today's climate, I think Vitello is perfect for the school he's at. I think he's got the best personality for that school. I think he's an incredible recruiter. I think that he has worked the transfer portal and NIL perfectly. And the winning and the proof is in the pudding with the results. I think he's the best coach in college baseball. And the only other guy that would be in the discussion, there's two other. There's Jay Johnson, who certainly is in the discussion. And then there's old buddy from A&M, who's now at Texas, who deserves the A-hole of the Year award for how he acted the other day. And he's great, but he can't win the title. I'll go Vitello.
So Tim Corbin doesn't get in the discussion?
No. Tim Corbin has lost his fastball. I mean, I wouldn't – I'm telling you right now. I can't rank him for you. Tim Corbin's a Hall of Fame coach. I think we can all agree on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Corbin's probably not even like one of the 10 best coaches in today's game with NIL and everything else.
Nah, that's a hot take. Look, Corbin 3 years ago played on the last day of the season, and, you know, they lost, but that was going for his third title. And I will agree with you. I think Vitello is the best coach right now. I also think that you're minimizing a little bit the scope of what he's done. NIL started on July 1st, 2021. That was a couple weeks or whatever, a week after Vitello's first trip to Omaha. In 2020, before that season, you know, got eliminated by COVID, I think the Vols were like 15-1. They were going to be tremendous in 2020. He performed a dramatic turnaround before any of this stuff started. So let's remember that. Let's also remember that his team the other night that won the championship had a whole bunch. It was way heavier on homegrown high school recruited players than it was portal additions. Some good portal ads, no doubt, but way more homegrown high school recruited players. So I don't disagree that he has attacked this era very effectively, but he was attacking this job and building great teams before NIL was something that anyone had ever uttered. So I think you got to give him a little bit more credit than that.
Okay, so I know this isn't the question, but you said it was July of 21, which is when NIL started?
Right.
And Tim Corbin's lost in the regional in the 3 years since NIL started.
Yes. No.
And listen, so you and still, that, but you still think he's a top 10 coach in the game?
Yes. And look, they've adapted. Now, look, early on, Corbin, I give him credit, actually, because he had the guts to be outspoken and say what all the other coaches wanted to say. But he has had to look at reality and say, look, it's either you get into this. And it's not like he's just realizing this now. He knew this before. A year ago, he knew this. And they, like, Vanderbilt is playing on the same field right now. Now, look, they haven't had, like this last couple of teams, they haven't had the power hitting you need. That is the game right now. So there's some things that he has to do in terms of roster adjustment. But also, some of the guys who would be mashing home runs for Vanderbilt simply sign with the pros, and that's the problem. When you recruit at the level they recruit at and that Tennessee recruits at, Tennessee is the number one recruiting class right now, okay? So, hey, there it is, right? But my understanding is they might really feel the pain this year of maybe reaching a little too high with some guys who are just going to go to and sign with the pros. I mean, that's part of this job too, right?
So I was told by a minor league coach today, I was told that NIL has changed everything because in baseball, a lot of these guys, apparently some guy was offered fifth round money at Arkansas and he turned it down because he called Dave Van Horn and said, it's 200,000 bucks. And Van Horn got him 200,000 bucks. And the players are looking at it today saying, why play in these crappy stadiums in front of nobody, making no money after the signing bonus, when I can go play college where I get the best strength coaches, the best coaches, the great facilities. You know, I get my rear end wiped for me. And there's just all these other sorority chicks that are out there that I can go spend my time with. They're like, why would I go play minor league ball when I can do this? And you're telling me Corbin's problem is he's losing guys to go play minor league ball?
No, but see, but right. Everything you said is right, but the key there was fifth round, right? It's kind of like the NFL draft, right? What do we talk about this year? The back half of the draft gets weak now because it's like, nah. But I'm talking about guys who are going to be higher than that.
And like Andrew Jones kid.
If you're a first or second round pick, you're still going, man. You're still going for that money. So, yes, there's no doubt. You can keep some of those guys who would have in the past been automatic if you can get them paid. And you're right. There's a lot of benefits to staying in and coming out later and all that. But point being.
So you would still say he's a top 10 coach in the game?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, he's got to prove it. But let's also, like, remember the program he built, I don't think it just gets wiped away into dust because of all this stuff. You have to win. You have to have more talented teams. They've actually been super active in the portal. They've loaded up. I don't know if it'll be good choices. We'll see. But they have been all over the portal.
So you and Robbie
and arms.
You and Robbie are super college baseball heads. Like, you guys talk bullpen in like May. Like, I can't, you know, I watch during the tournament. Like, that's I'm not watching regular season baseball, college baseball. But you guys are seam heads when it comes to that. Fair?
I mean, we mostly talk once it's the tournament, but okay.
Okay. You say top 10. Corbin or Vitello?
I'm saying Corbin is top 10.
Or Vitello?
Who would I take right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I take Vitello. But
Corbin or Schlossnagel?
Oh, God. Schlossnagel is so disingenuous. I'll take Corbin.
Joe, come on. I agree. He's the biggest a-hole, but I think we got to – I mean, Schlossnagel's right now winning a lot more than Corbin.
Yeah, this year. This year he had a much better team than Corbin, and he had some great teams with TCU before. But, like, again, Corbin's not that far removed.
Corbin, or whatever the guy's name is at Kentucky that's turned them around, Mangione or whatever? Corbin, or him?
I'm Corbin. I'm going to go Corbin. You're right that Jay Johnson he's got to be in there, and that's very close. But Corbin has done too much over time. If he wants to stand
Corbin
in
or
there
Bakich
and fight,
at Clemson right now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe okay, I might go Bakich, and he might replace Bakich. Or, I mean, he might replace Corbin, too, by the way. I don't know if they
Corbin
can get him or not.
Is it O'Sullivan at Florida?
Yeah, I'll take Corbin. O'Sullivan's got all kinds of crap going on. Corbin is
– But he's Corbin in the World Series, and Corbin's getting beat in a regional.
Okay, so let's be the prisoner of every moment again.
3 years, Joe. 3 years since we've been allowed to pay the players, and for 3 years, Vandy's exited in the first round.
Okay, so then doubt him. That's fine. We'll see. I will absolutely cast my lot with Corbin, knowing that he's playing the same game right now. He understands what he has to do. They're doing it. And if he's going to stand in and fight, I am absolutely not betting against him getting his program back to the top.
More Jared versus Joe next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 of the game. Jared versus Joe, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Ian, go.
Okay, one last on the baseball, since we brought him up. This A&M coach, Schlossnagel, is this the biggest coaching backstab we've ever seen?
Who's going first?
Joe, go ahead.
Ooh, biggest coaching backstab. The ones that come to mind, well, first of all, I mean, Saban, not going to be the coach. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. Certainly Bobby Petrino with the Falcons. I mean,
that's an all-timer.
That's a doozy. I don't know if I'd say this is the biggest, but it's truly stupid. Like that he would say the words he said Monday night, knowing what was coming the next day. First of all, you can't be surprised that it's ass. Second of all, the whole thing is insane to me. So Chris Del Conte is his best friend, right? So what kind of friend?
That's the AD at Texas, by the way.
That's the AD at Texas. What kind of best friend says, hey, I know right before my buddy plays for the national championship at our rival, let's go ahead and fire the other coach and get this cooking and make this a real problem for everybody. And then he can answer for that tonight, too. Rather than just shut up for one more day and then just say, boom, here you go, fell swoop, we got our guy. That's just bizarre to me that that's how this all went down. I mean, there's no way. I mean, I don't know if it hurt them, but, there's a potential for that to be a real distraction for your best friend's team trying to win it all. I realize that school is your rival, but, what the hell? But I can't say this is number one overall.
So I'm with Joe. The Bobby Petrino thing, that is the, in my opinion, the lifetime achievement award of just backstabbing, right? I'll never forget, Petrino signed a contract at Louisville and said, I think he turned down the Raiders or something and said, I'm going to be the coach at Louisville forever. And then he goes to the Falcons, right after he says that. Then he turns around and he leaves the Falcons in the middle of the year to go to Arkansas. Then the way he left Arkansas, that's not really a backstab, but that's embarrassing in and of itself. There's only two others that come to mind at the same level of Schlossnagel. And I think Schlossnagel was the second biggest doofus in all of it, because I thought the way he answered the question, attacking the reporter personally by calling him selfish, I thought was really wrong. You know, Roy Williams was asked right after the championship game under similar circumstances 20 years ago about whether or not he was going to leave Kansas right after they lost the national title to go to North Carolina. I don't know if you remember that, Joe. Bonnie Bernstein was sitting there with him on CBS, and he was like, Bonnie, I know that you got to do your job, and I know somebody said to you in that earpiece that you have to ask that question, but on the human level, I just don't think that now's the time, and I just don't have anything to say about that. And it's like, well, Roy Williams wasn't really backstabbing Kansas. I mean, he was a Carolina guy, and I think everybody kind of knew Roy was Dean's right-hand man for all those years, that at some point after Bill Guthridge got fired, that, like, no, I mean, they're going to make – well, he wasn't the right-hand man. The right-hand man was the guy who replaced Dean, but then after that guy left – I mean,
Roy Guthridge, but Roy was his number one. Roy was his guy.
I mean, like, I don't think you could really be mad at Roy for taking that job, given the Carolina history. The only other one I can think of is Tuberville, because Tuberville did this twice. Tuberville, now Petrino actually did to Tuberville what Tuberville was doing to everybody else. But if you remember, Joe, remember Tuberville was at Ole Miss, and he said, they're going to have to carry me out in a pine box for me to take the Auburn job. And then he took the Auburn job.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty, like, it wasn't like Schlossnagel said after the game, they're going to have to carry me out of here in a pine box. Although I was so confused when he was like, I left my family to come here. Like, did his wife divorce him so he could be the A&M coach?
I mean, I assume that means that they just stayed in – the family stayed in Fort Worth because they had grown up there and the kids finished school or something like that. But, yes, he made it sound like some gigantic hardship or something. Like this doesn't happen all the time.
Oh, it's one bizarre. Texter says Lane Kiffin leaving Tennessee. That is up there.
Yeah. But, that's up there. But it's a year, and that's the same sort of thing. It's like, oh, that was the only job that was going to get him, you know? And so, I mean, and at that point, USC was the Ferrari of jobs in college football. I mean, Pete Carroll had taken
it
to that level. So,
would you say Brian Kelly leaving LSU to go to leaving Notre Dame to go to LSU was kind of a backstab, given the fact that Notre Dame had always had Brian Kelly's back, even after he got that kid killed? Like, they had his back and paid all that money, and he still ditched him for a bigger check.
Yeah, but he ditched him because he ditched him. I believe that he ditched him because he thought he needed to go to an SEC program to win a national championship. And he was kind of – I mean, there were times when he was shaky there. I mean, he got real close, actually, to being fired there. So I don't put that in the same level.
Yeah, biggest backstab. I'm going to have to go with Tuberville. You can't say they have to carry me out of here on a box. You can't say that and then take the next job. I'll go with Tuberville over Schlossnagel, but oof. And, you know, Tuberville, he also might be earning the Lifetime Achievement Award too. Ian, what's next?
Good candidates. Very good pulls there from you guys. Okay, moving on to some Titans stuff. We played the clip earlier of Titans defensive lineman Jeffrey Simmons on the Rich Eisen show talking about how he talks a lot of trash. And he brought up how he will be talking trash to Caleb Williams about his painted nails. Was that a mistake from Jeffrey Simmons to get out early, this early, about the trash talk for week one? Jared, go. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Sanders was screaming about it today, about how it was a bad decision. I think, you know, there's two things here. Number one, if you're going to trash talk Caleb Williams about his painted nails, like, don't you want to surprise him with that? Like, now when he gets to the line of scrimmage in week one and he's like, hey, you paint your nails, ha, ha, ha. Like, Caleb Williams knows it's coming because Jeffrey Simmons told him 2 months ago. So I'm like, I'm not so sure that was a really good idea. But also, like, I understand trash talking during the game, but I wouldn't be doing any of that trash talking in the media before the game. Like, that I'd be, you know, a little weary of. You know, Simmons doesn't get a ton of media attention for a lot of different reasons, his position, the team he plays for, things like that. I'm not saying it's going to hurt the Titans, but, you know, I'd say even the trash talk should be part of the game plan, right? If it's a big deal to him, you know, hey, that's part of the game plan. Keep that to yourself. Don't go on Rich Eisen and start saying you're going to make fun of his painted nails. Now it won't land with an impact. That's like saying we're going to blitz the safety. Well, now they know you're going to blitz the safety. So are you going to be able to sack the quarterback with that? No, I'm against it. Plus, Chris Sanders sold me on it. Bad call on Simmons' part.
I mean, I don't think it's some big deal. Okay,
agreed.
I know this is my, you know, my default on stuff like this, but it's just, you know, I don't think this is going to be a factor. But I agree. Like, if you think that's funny, then keep it in your pocket. You know, like if you think you can rattle him, then if you're going to tell Rich Eisen everything you're going to say, then how are you going to rattle him? Like, I don't think it's going to affect the game at all. But you know, it's chatter in June, and to your point, Jeff does not get a lot of opportunity, so you know it's fine.
Okay. Ian,
We got two quick hockey ones.
Okay,
should the Preds, Barry Trotz was on the show and he talked about a no movement clause for UC Saros, should that be included in the contract? Joe, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I guess to me it's like, what's the sliding scale like? What does that do for the number? Because I that has to be part of the discussion, right? Like, to me, there's got to be some give and take. And so I think that, and it sounds like Trotz made it sound like it's going to be limited in some way, right? It's not going to be a full no movement. So I'm fine with that being in the equation if it does help you work on that number, because you've got to scrounge every bit of space you can to try to build this roster around him. If you're going to sign him, you are in a win now window, whether you're good enough to be in one or not.
Yeah, I think that Barry Trotz did kind of show his hand, which is that he's going to give trade protection, but I thought he made it pretty clear he's not giving trade protection all the way. He said that he's earned some trade protection, and that some, I think, is pretty important, because then it still allows them to develop Askarov and then move him off. I don't think you get a deal done without any trade protection. And if I was Saros, I would be pushing for a full no move. If he gives him a full no move, now we got problems, because now you got to trade Askarov immediately. But if I was Saros, I'd be pushing for it. But it sounded like Barry is not willing to give that. And the way Barry has talked about, you know, the two sides staying in contact and everything else, the more that it makes me feel like they've probably already hammered that out, and it probably is limited trade protection, and I can live with that.
Okay, the other quick one. Shea Weber has made the Hockey Hall of Fame. Is Shea Weber a Hall of Famer? Jared, go ahead first.
No. He is no. And this is actually larger than Shea Weber. Like, Shea Weber was a great Predator. I mean, he was a great Predator. But he's not a Hall of Famer. A Hall of Fame. Sidney Crosby is a Hall of Famer. Alexander Ovechkin is a Hall of Famer.
So the Hall of Famer is only like top 10 players of all time?
So
yes,
here's what I believe the Hall
of
Fame is.
All time are Hall of Famers.
This is what I believe about the Hall of Fame. And this is not just hockey. This is all sports. And we're running into this in all sports. If I can say to you, if we're sitting here, we're talking about a player, and I say Ricky Henderson, we'd all say Hall of Famer, right?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Okay, Scott Rolen.
It's close.
No.
Yeah.
No. We're putting too many of these guys in. Edgerrin James does not belong in the NFL, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Calvin Johnson does. Edgerrin James does not. Dwight Freeney does not. Those guys do not belong in the Hall of Fame. These borderline hall-ish guys, to me, the Hall of Fame, you've got to be a bona fide superstar in order to, you've got to be Ken Griffey Jr. You got to be John Smoltz. You got to be that kind of player for me. And Shea Weber wasn't that kind of player. I mean, I'm looking at Mattias Ekholm, who's had a great career. And I'm like, if they won the cup the other night, we going to put him in the Hall of Fame? I mean, it's ridiculous. And for Shea Weber to go into the first ballot? What? He's still in the NHL. I mean, it's crazy. I can't believe it. And so my issue is not with Shea Weber, who, again, was a great Predator, was a great player, but it's my issue with this letting everybody into the Hall of Fame when it's like, is the Hall of Fame supposed to be important or is it not? Because if you're going to let everybody in, if you're going to let Scott Rolen in, if you're going to let Edgerrin James in, if you're going to let Tony Kukoc into the Hall of Fame, then no thank you. It doesn't mean anything anymore. And that's how I feel about Weber making the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, well, as Robbie pointed out this morning, and you just completely glossed over, this is not the NHL Hall of Fame.
Everybody wins a gold medal on Team Canada.
No.
They're the best team. Everybody wins a gold medal on Canada.
Yeah, he made the all-star team in 2010, winning gold. He was their best defenseman. He wore the A and was also their best defenseman in 2014. He was the lead guy in two gold medals.
They could have done it without him.
Guy. Okay, they could have won it without him.
Who won it the years before he was doing that? Oh, yeah, Canada.
That's a huge part of his resume, and you cannot just gloss over that, dismiss that. Also, I agree with the idea, if you are elite, and you know what? He doesn't have the Norrises, and Preds fans understand that that's, you know, it's unfortunate because he should have at least one and probably two. He doesn't have those. But he was a top handful to be safe defenseman for nearly a decade in the league. That is elite. That's elite play. He got to, you know, he got to the Stanley Cup final with Montreal. Obviously, he missed that run here. But when you're that level of player, that level of excellence for that long, plus you throw in the international excellence, you're wrong.
Here's my thing. I covered the Boston Bruins in 2013, and that was a lockout year, so you really only played your own conference, and it was all division games. And I watched for the first time in my life this defenseman on the Montreal Canadiens, P.K. Subban, who won the Norris Trophy that year. And every time I watched P.K. Subban play, I thought, holy crap, who is that? Every time I watched him play. I was a Predators fan at the time. I had respect for Shea Weber, but it wasn't anything like what I saw out of P.K. Subban. When they made that trade, I was asleep like Joe was before the beginning of Jared versus Joe. I was asleep and heard on Boston radio that the Predators had traded Weber for Subban. I jumped out of my bed and I shouted, yes, yes, and it was a good trade. I'm sorry. Do people normally feel that way when Hall of Famers get traded? No. And the first ballot, Joe.
Jared, that was in 2016. I mean, Shea Weber's prime was in, you know, years
and
before
And P.K. Subban
that.
Was better. Shea Weber's prime was like 2011, 2012, and P.K. Subban was a better player in his prime than Weber was, and they're not going to put P.K. in the Hall of Fame. Or at least they shouldn't. I mean, hell, they might put everybody in the Hall of Fame. They might put me in the Hall of Fame. I don't know. Ian, who wins this week?
Well, it was a good week. A little bit more agreement than I would like, probably. You know, both on Vitello and the Vols program, A&M, all that kind of stuff. But I think I'm going to slightly give it to Joe for his Shea Weber. I do think Weber.
Homers.
I
knew it was coming on. I knew it was happening.
And for Joe being consistent with his Vols better program.
So. Well, I mean, I say he'll win the title. They won the title. But I knew that homer take was going to do it. Joe, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Good job, Ian. Great job judging today.
Okay.
Jared, okay job arguing today. Decent.
Okay.
Average. Okay.
To the Shea Weber take, because I got thoughts. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
You mind if we talk Blue Liners for a second?
Well, you know, I'll never shy away from Blue Liners.
Yes, Shea Weber, one of the most impactful players on the power play in NHL history over the last 25 years. His 106 power play goals, easily the most by a D-man over that stretch. Again, first year eligible, slam dunk, your former Blue
Liner. Yeah, most deserving for sure, because when you look at the position he played a premier position. We're talking about right-handed shot defensemen that played top pairing, that played big minutes, that played a shutdown, that played the top-line power play. And you talk about his impact internationally, too, with Canada. He's the guy that absorbed all the big matchups, and he's a guy that started his career in Nashville, helped establish that organization, that community. Went to one Stanley Cup final. We all know how hard the Stanley Cup is to win, but the career that he played over 1,000 games and all the goals that he scored, well-deserved to be nominated.
Am I the only person living on planet Earth? I mean, seriously. Shea Weber, slam dunk Hall of Famer. What? Shea Weber was a really good player. right? Like Shea Weber, I think of Shea Weber and Pecorine as kind of the Steve McNair and the Eddie George of the NHL, or excuse me, of the Predators, which was, well, now I kind of think it's Forsberg and Yossi, but I think Forsberg and Yossi have passed Weber. But again, at that point in time, you know, the first era of good players, and it's like, who was better than the other one? And they were always considered really good by the league, but they really weren't considered the best. That's Weber and Rene. And I loved Shea Weber when he was on the Predators. But he wasn't that good. Again, we're talking Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame. Not the Scott Rolen, Fred McGriff Hall of Fame. Not the Edgerrin James Hall of Fame. I mean, to me, like, the Hall of Fame, I'm trying to think right now, like, who's in the Hall of Fame in the NHL? Like, Victor Hedman is a Hall of Famer. But you want to know what Victor Hedman's done? He's won the Norris Trophy. He's won the Cup. Like, what are we talking about? You know, Dylan texts into the text line, and he says, I wasn't a real big Preds fan when Shea Weber was in his prime, but I think it's weird that Pekka has a statue outside of Bridgestone. And I'm thinking about Shea Weber's number's not retired yet by the Predators. Shea Weber doesn't have a statue outside of here, but he's a first ballot Hall of Famer? And it's not like Shea Weber did anything when he went to Montreal. What are we talking about? Shea Weber wasn't even the best player on his team in Montreal. He was the best player on his team here. That he was. But like when I think of the Hall of Fame, there were a lot of good players over the years in all these sports that are kind of forgotten, and I hate to say it, but it's reality. And now we're trying to convince ourselves that Omar Vizquel belongs in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And yet Willie's like, oh, Jared's crazy. Abs, oh, Jared's crazy. Joe and Robbie, oh, Jared's crazy. TSN, oh, Jared's crazy. I think what it is I think it's a Canadian thing. And I think because he won the gold medals in Canada, everybody just slops that up, and they're like, oh, yes, in Canada, he was a great hockey for the Leafs. So we go, yo. That's what it is. He stood on guard for thee, and he got you two gold medals, so you're putting him in the Hall of Fame.
Blame Canada.
But it's ridiculous. I'm a Canadian fan, or fans of Canadians now, so I'm not going to rip on Canada. But it's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Ryan's up next here. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Ryan, go ahead.
Jared, you're like, Shea Weber does not belong in the Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
You have guys like Alexander Mokley, who have been waiting years to be in the Hall of Fame, who has 10 times the hardware that Shea Weber has, and he's still not. He gets snubbed every year.
Matt, did he win two gold medals for Canada?
No, he actually won. He won Stanley Cup, you know, something that everyone loves more than a gold medal. Ask Canada about it. But, no, he was a good player, cool, but he does not belong in the Hall of Fame. Neither does David Poile. Once again, what did Poile win?
I'm going to give you Poile. Poile's won the most games. David Poile belongs in the Hall of Fame. Poile's won the most games in the history of the NHL. That means something. He was the head of USA Hockey, which, again, apparently matters a lot because of Shea Weber. Thank you, Ryan. Shea Weber. David Poile, I am not arguing David Poile. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. Put him in. Shea Weber, come on now. By the way, somebody texted in and said, Jared says that Edgerrin James and Dwight Freeney aren't Hall of Famers. Surely his Titans bias didn't blind him there. You never hear me argue for Steve McNair and Eddie George in the Hall of Fame. I am sitting here telling you that a guy on my team, the Predators, does not belong in the Hall of Fame. I am an Atlanta Braves fan. I think it's ridiculous to put Andrew Jones in the Hall of Fame. Fred McGriff, I actually think, probably was a Hall of Famer, but he didn't get to 500 home runs. You will not hear me sit there and, you know, campaign for my guy because he's my team or against your guy because it's your team. I think if you belong in the Hall of Fame, you belong in the Hall of Fame. That's how I feel about it. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106 for the game. Stillman & Company here on the program. We're going to give away some tickets, so we'll do that now. Be caller 5 right now at 615-737-1025. You'll win a pair of tickets to see Sarah McLachlan at Ascend Amphitheater this Saturday night. Good luck on that one. And I got to tell you, I'm all worked up over the Shea Weber thing, but there was a little nugget that came out today. You know, it's crazy. The Stanley Cup ends on Monday. Tuesday, we figure out who's in the Hall of Fame. Wednesday, we have a little bit of a break, and then tomorrow and Friday, we're going to have all the draft stuff. You know, all the trades before the draft are going to be popping up, and then Friday's the draft, and then right after that, Monday's free agency. I kind of like it. But today, the NHL dropped a nugget. I did not even know this was coming. Ian, did you know this was coming?
About the uniforms?
Yeah.
No.
So apparently, Adidas is out, and Fanatics is in.
No, that's not a good sign with the baseball situation.
Oh, dear God. And I know Fanatics is telling people with all these different quotes about how players have tried these out and how it's the same facility that's made the uniforms before. And I know. But Fanatics screwed up baseball so badly that they do not deserve the benefit of the doubt. So this is going to be a problem for me until Fanatics proves that it is not a problem. Because I don't understand why I have to give Fanatics the benefit of the doubt. And here's the deal with Fanatics. I don't know where Fanatics came from, when they started, what they... But to me, Fanatics feels like a company that just has a bunch of money. And so they've decided, okay, we're in. And they haven't really earned the reputation. You know, Nike had to earn the reputation with Air Jordan, and then that kind of exploded. Fanatics, what have they done? Like, Umbro has done more, in my opinion, than Fanatics. That's the first thing. The second thing is this. I do not understand the NBA anymore. And apparently I'm not the only one, because the TV ratings keep going down, down, and down. But the New York Knicks traded 5 first-round picks, including 4 unprotected first-round picks, for some random Mikal Bridges, who's a solid player but not a superstar. He's not Jordan or Pippen. And they traded 5 picks, 4 unprotected first-rounders, because he went to college with the other guys on their team. And tonight, somebody is going to draft LeBron's son, not because LeBron's son is any good, because LeBron's son kind of sucks, but they're going to draft him because he's LeBron's son. When did we stop trying to win in basketball? That's it for us. We're out of here. Stillman and Company. The draft's next. We'll see you tomorrow, too.